When I was a kid watching Star Wars, I did think to myself, I wonder what the reality of this future is going to be. I did not expect it to be Amazon Prime drones shooting down space balloons.
Wow.
Welcome, listeners, to another frippery-free and this time very futuristic balloon, drone, and portal-filled edition of Bad Voltage. And this is, what, episode 29 now?
Yeah.
It's episode 29.
And 1 year in, what are we going to talk about this show, guys?
As Jerry says, balloons versus drones. We're talking about Altinet and Google Loon and Facebook's internet.org and potentially massive wars in space about the internet.
Not as exciting as Star Wars, though, let's be honest. But what is exciting and interesting is the Rubik's Portal. We covered this a few shows back, and we were a little bit snotty and kind of judgmental about whether this thing's actually going to happen. Well, we're going to have a recap on that, and we're going to get the CEO of Rubik's on the show, Brandon Mayers, to talk more about it.
And speaking of things that nobody's seen or heard about yet, we're going to be interviewing Carl Ritchell, the CEO of System 76. They're announcing something on the show here today, and we don't actually know what it is. But they're going to come on the show later, the CEO of the company, and announce something. I'm assuming it's going to be awesome.
I'm sure it will be. And also in this episode, I will review the latest Kindle, the Kindle Voyage.
And in our Wrong in 60 Seconds segment, Jono is now going to talk about how shit people are.
Yes, this is true. Jeremy.
Jono.
Of shit people.
Hey, Jeremy, what's the thing you do right now?
What is the thing
what
I
is
do
it?
Now? And now, Bad Voltage. So this segment is kind of one of my favorite kind of segments in that this is something that was completely brought on by a listener suggestion. So I believe it was Andy sent in an email that said, I'd like to hear some discussion of OuterNet or similar projects such as Google Loon and Facebook's internet.org. And we kind of discussed
what
the email.
What is that, Jeremy?
Well, we kind of discussed that email, and I was going to say, just for a little insight into the show, one of the first things when we get a suggestion is we decide whether we, the four of us personally, think it's kind of interesting. And in this case, we had all heard of all three of those projects, but weren't intimately familiar with any of them, really. So we looked it up, and we decided,
yeah, it's interesting. So, internet.org is a lot like whitehouse.com?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Just making sure I understand what we're talking about today.
So,
because
we weren't familiar with them, I'm just going to read a quick blurb about each of them, and then we can just, before it, I'm sure, degenerates into a whether balloons or drones are better discussion, we'll hopefully get a little discussion on the merits of each project. So, I'll start with OuterNet. It says, OuterNet's goal is to provide free access to content from the web through geostationary and low Earth orbit satellites made available effectively to all parties in the world. The project uses data casting and UDP through both small satellites and CubeSats and more conventional geostationary communication satellites. It's Wi-Fi. Any Wi-Fi enabled devices would communicate with the satellite hotspots, which receive data broadcasts from the satellites. And it's a little different from the rest of them. It's not open internet access. It's they deliver 200 megabytes per day to the receivers, and it's whatever they decide for that period. So Project Loon, which is Google, is a research and development project being developed by Google with the mission of providing internet access to rural and remote areas. The project uses high-altitude balloons placed in the stratosphere at an altitude of about 20 miles or 40 bricks, 32 kilometers, to create an aerial wireless network, and they claim it's about 3G speeds. And they fly about twice as high as airplanes, but below where satellites fly. And they claim that each balloon covers in between 20 and 40 kilometers.
And then
internet.org is a little bit different, and then it's more of a partnership. And it's between Facebook, and they have like Samsung, Ericsson, MediaTek, Nokia, Opera, Qualcomm. There's a bunch of them. And they want to bring affordable internet to everyone by increasing affordability, increasing efficiency, and facilitating the development of new business models around the provisions of internet access.
All right.
And they
That sounds like
that
a
sounds
bunch
highly
that,
leveraged.
That's like, yeah, it, right. That's that, like synergy, buzzword bullcrap.
That is by far the
most
buzzword crammed one. And instead of using balloons, they're the first thing that they just released is via drones, solar powered drones. So, with that all out of the way, what do you guys think?
It's interesting how obviously there's this kind of desire to bring the internet to everybody. And obviously, again, you can say, well, Google or Facebook are doing it because every new person who joins the internet is one more customer for them. But it's interesting that these are three completely different approaches to solving the same problem. I mean, Alternet have basically stuck all of Wikipedia on a USB key and then launched it into space. And you can download it from there, right?
Rad.
And the Google people have gone, let's build balloons. The thing I liked about this, right, a balloon is supposed to cover a 40 kilometer diameter circle, which means if you look at how much land there is in the world, the loon people, they have all these pictures of kind of one balloon drifting majestically around the stratosphere.
It's going to be balloons
but
everywhere,
in order
man.
In order to actually cover all the land in the world, you need 1 million balloons, right? Rather than
did you do the
one.
Math on that?
I did do the math on that, in
nice.
Fact. Although up until about 15 minutes ago, I forgot about the fact that you don't have to cover the middle of the ocean with the internet.
But that's the thing you do, because they're floating with the wind, you do have to cover the middle of the ocean because they can't control where they go.
What if the wind starts clustering all the balloons together and then you end up with like this mega fast spot?
They claim that they detect how fast the winds are in different areas of the atmosphere and lower and raise the balloons to go where they want them to go.
The way it works is you can think of there being sort of a sphere of wind around the earth going in one direction and then a slightly bigger sphere going in the other direction. So if you want a balloon to move one way, you make it go up a bit, and if you want it to go another way, you make it go down a bit. I'm reasonably confident that the sort of the technology they're talking about is workable, right?
Well, hang on a second. Are these balloons in some way controlled?
Yes.
Autonomously. Yes. They're not individually controlled.
Right. Okay. So it's not just like a balloon just wandering around in the weather.
It's not just a free roaming hotspot balloon. Yeah.
and they haven't
Although
got
one
a
did just
people.
Crash in Washington and cause a big power outage. I saw. So they're.
I mean, awesome. They do not have a million individual game players sitting somewhere with a joystick playing the world's best video game of directing a balloon around the world.
Is it really only a million balloons? Because I did not do the math. I would have thought they would need more than that. Because if it's a million balloons, and I can't imagine they're more than $100 a piece at that scale, $100 million is not really that much money for Google.
That's if you can. You could make all the balloons geostationary, which you can't, and you want to blanket every inch of the land on the earth, and they cover 40 kilometers, I reckon you need about 1.1 million. In practice, you probably need about four times that amount because you won't
even
get the perfect.
Let's say five times that amount. That makes it $500 million. They're already $1 billion into Google Fiber, and that only covers one city.
Yeah. So, I mean,
now,
what happens
when there's like a hurricane or something like that? Like, what happens when like tropical storm jerkwad comes through
that,
and blasts
you? Either get super fast internet or no internet then.
It's seriously, you're above all that. You're above the weather. Weather happens below this level.
No man is above the weather.
So space balloons.
They are space balloons. They're 20 kilometers up, man.
Okay, that is pretty high.
So,
I would love to have been in the meeting when someone sat down and said, so, all right, Hank, what do you think we should spend our money? It's like, I believe we should build 1 million space balloons so everybody has the internet.
I love Hank for saying that.
And then it happens.
Hank does
Brilliant.
Rule.
Hank is awesome.
So in countries that they censor the internet, like China, do you think they'll now have some kind of laser drone balloon shooter?
You have to have the balloon receiver. You can't just talk to a balloon directly from your Android phone. There are magic receivers which you have to get.
Yeah, but I
like that you just said
imagine.
we have to have the balloon receiver. I can't believe we're having this fucking conversation.
Okay, but from a practical standpoint, the balloon receivers can't be that complicated or expensive either. So really, smuggling into China in bulk, or let's be honest, they're probably all made in China anyway. So just not export it out.
Well, possibly,
just keep a couple
equally,
and spread them around the countryside.
If I said to you, here is a bright orange ball on a stick, which is evidence that you're committing a crime, would your first response be, I know what I'll do, I'll bolt it to the outside of my house?
Probably, but I'm not the average person, so I'm the wrong guy to ask.
But I think the technology for Google Loon seems plausible. I mean, the very idea of saying, I know what we're going to do now, we're going to launch 5 million space balloons, seems a bit nuts. And you do get the impression, if you watch, they've got a bunch of videos on the website, and one of them's a simulation. Some guy put together this simulation video of how the balloons would move and how they control them and so on. And that's all doable, solar-powered balloons. But if you look at it, it looks like from space, you'll no longer be able to see the Earth because it'll be covered in balloons. Obviously, this is not the case. Right, but it seems like there's going to be a shed load of them in space, right?
But and then a ton of drones, too. I mean, are we inexorably moving towards a time when Google Loon balloons get into a war with Facebook drones?
Yes. Yes, we absolutely are. And this has to happen for my own sanity, because otherwise my dreams were all for naught.
No, you see,
who would win it?
This is a critical point. I would like to bring internet to the whole world, but not by turning the whole atmosphere into the last starfighter, right? No, we're not there.
Totally disagree.
Well, it's pretty obvious in a fight between balloons and drones, drones will win.
Whoa.
I mean, you know.
Whoa there, sucker. Okay, hold on a second. I feel like going into this with drones around and just balloons as far as the eye can see, we're getting into some really serious, like, steampunk alternate reality future stuff here, and I think that's fantastic. I think we have these millions of Stuart balloons all over the Earth, which they're now Stuart balloons, and, you know, there needs to be one big dirigible that Google or someone else builds. And that's like the mega bandwidth dirigible. And it just flies over the Earth, spreading extra bandwidth and parties to wherever it's coming around to. And they have weapons on board the dirigible. It's like the Google Tanic, and it shoots down the drones. And I think that that's awesome, because let's be honest, this is above the weather, which means it's above the law. And as far as I'm concerned, they can go nuts up there and they can just start blasting things out of the sky. And I want this to happen badly.
Are you instead of Google Plus, we have Hindenburg right now? Plus now, I guess.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
I ought to point out that the internet does not get deposited on places like a crop-spraying airplane. That's
it
not
does
how
now.
It does not.
You know, but when I was a kid watching Star Wars, I did think to myself, I wonder what the reality of this future is going to be. I did not expect it to be Amazon Prime drones shooting down space balloons.
Wow. I mean,
it's just a matter of time until they shoot a million echoes into the sky and just hope everyone can hear
please
everyone.
Spare me. If you look at internet.org, right? It's interesting that Google went, how do we solve this problem? By applying technology. And Facebook went, how do we solve this problem? By building a consortium, right? But internet.org is basically a bunch of companies who got together. And as Jeremy says, the first thing they're doing is drones or whatever. But they're exploring a variety of technologies, including high altitude, long endurance planes, satellites, and lasers.
Yeah,
but the thing I thought was most interesting is this is a bunch of companies got together. Google is not part of it. And there's a thing on the front page of their site saying, this is too big a problem to be done by any one company or government. And you can almost imagine a great big neon sign saying, Google, this means you, right? Stop trying to solve this by yourself.
What's interesting to me about this, I watched this fascinating documentary the other day. I think it came out about a year or a couple of years back. From, you know, there's that network or magazine called Vice, and they have this thing called Vice Guide to Travel or something, and they had this thing where the founder of Vice went to North Korea. And it was fascinating looking into North Korea and really eye-opening about just how disconnected from the planet that country really is. Mm-hmm. This would be potentially phenomenal there, where if you've got this floating internet that's happening above those people, and people can then smuggle in devices that can connect to it and they can really see the rest of the planet. I mean, it could have a huge impact.
Do you really want one company, or in internet.org's case, a consortium of a few very large companies controlling access to the entire, in effect, the entire third world?
Well,
I mean, because they really will be able to control, I think, a little bit too much in that case.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. The internet right now, even though it's you know, architecturally the internet is disconnected from any single organization. The people who are really running the internet are a bunch of large organizations. It is Google and it's Comcast and whatever. But Hustler, you know, I think that it's got to be a consortium. It's got to be as close to being, you know, representing the best interest of the planet as possible. It can't be a single company.
It kind of sounds like something XPRIZE should be tackling.
Yeah. An interesting thought. You bring up North Korea there, right? And North Korea are perfectly within their rights to shoot down any balloons that cross the country. Right? Usquead Coelum means that you own everything above your land and below it.
Only up to 100 kilometers, right?
Could say,
I thought after 100 kilometers, you don't own it.
But they're not 100 kilometers up. They're not in space. They're only 20 kilometers.
Oh, so they're not space balloons. The strato balloons.
Yeah, this is the Google balloons, right? The Altenet stuff are actually going to be satellites in actual space, right? They're trying out, they're trying to persuade NASA to let them put a thing on the International Space Station some point early next year. But they're actually going to launch little cube satellites, as Jeremy says. But the Google Loon thing, the point is that there aren't just the balloons over North Korea. They hang there, North Korea shoots them down and that's it. Presumably, if some guy in North Korea sits there with a pop gun and shoots down a balloon every time he goes over, eventually he'll get all the balloons.
Rad.
Well, obviously they need to weaponize the balloons.
Yeah, this is the problem, right? So it does worry me, the point you make about them being lots of different people going at this different ways. And the first time that a drone crashes into a Google balloon...
Yeah, but you know what? People don't care about that. We've already got weaponized balloons with missiles crashing into the United States ground, and no one gives a rat's ass. There's literally, because over the city of Seattle, there's two drones with tons and tons of ammunition flying around all the time, and everyone's like, it might crash, whatevs. I'm going to go get a hot chocolate. So I don't think people are going to worry too much about it.
I don't think most people care about it. I think there'll be groups of people, to your point, Brian, that will give a shit about it, but most people are like, oh, whatever, it's the thing that I don't understand. Hey, check it out, cats on the internet.
Not when there's really good hot Korea. Chocolate.
So, I think this is a thing that will be great to get the old bad voltage community's input on. Please go to community.badvoltage.org and let us know what you think. Like, are you a ballooner or a droner? And what do you think of the implications for this technology in the third world and elsewhere? And how do you think this should be run? Do you think a consortium is a better way of doing things? Or do you think a single organization or company will be okay? Go and share your thoughts at community.badvoltage.org. Okay, now on the show, we've got Carl Rochelle, who is the founder and CEO of Systems 76. How are you doing, Carl?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. Now, I'm sure that Systems 76 needs no introduction. Most of our listeners are going to know what you folks do. But how about you tell us what is the pitch that you give to people when you describe what you do at Systems 76?
That's a good question. Actually, there's a little bit of a story behind that. In fact, I always had some troubles. I'm not too into talking about what I do so much, but it's kind of my job and in the same respect. So I was on a plane one time coming back from, I think it was Orlando, it was actually probably a UDS out there, and I was sitting next to a woman who asked me what I did, and I told her, we build better PCs. And that kind of sums it up, I think. We build really high quality products that are better than your average product. And I think that kind of takes you away from, although open source matters a whole lot to us, it's a hard concept for people if you want to describe it quickly. And so we just build something that's easier for you to use, that's high quality and a better PC.
Now you've been focused, over the years. I know that you obviously have laptops and you've got desktops and servers. One of the questions I have is, one thing that we're constantly hearing about is the decline of the desktop business, that people are selling fewer desktop computers, and that the impact of tablets and the impact of cell phones is putting a strain as well on laptops as well. What's been your observation over the years? Have you seen much of a change, and how has that impacted System 76?
I think we're uniquely positioned to have for less of an impact to the move from laptops and desktops to tablets and mobile phones. I think for one, those are tertiary devices. They're not your primary device. And then secondarily, our users are generally the people that are creating things, that are making stuff, whether they're developing software, they're using some of the most advanced technology to try to solve some of the world's problems, like cure cancer and really complex issues. And so our products are uniquely suited to those users, and those users need keyboards and they need displays. So we've had less of an impact.
Right.
Where we have seen it is people shopping. Our website is one of the strong motivations between the rebrand that we just pushed out a couple of days ago, is that now 30% of the people that come to our website are on a phone or on a tablet.
Right.
And that's a huge, huge number, whereas it was 10% last year.
And that's a really useful statistic as well, to have that, to get a sense of where your audience is and the technology they're using.
Right. And that's... obviously, when 30% of the people that are coming to you, they want a computer and they're looking for a computer, but they're using a phone or a tablet to purchase that computer. That's what we've seen. It's an exciting area. There's obviously a lot of buzz around it. We think there's a little too much. the press is in love with every phone that comes out, and I can't help but to admit that it drives me a little crazy because it's a phone. it is what it is, and that's all right. We want to get people excited about computers again.
I imagine that in there as well, the fact that you focus on Ubuntu. I mean, I would argue that System 76 is probably one of the best known companies that really does explicitly focus on an open source operating system. And obviously there's the Dells and other companies who will have Ubuntu or another platform open source operating system as an option, and usually it's a not very good deployment of that option. But for a company that focuses on it, I'd argue that System 76 is probably the most well known. But how is your relationship with Ubuntu? I mean, Ubuntu's seen a lot of change over the years, particularly heading into the convergence world. Is Ubuntu still the right bet for you, or have you considered other options?
Ubuntu is undoubtedly the right operating system. I think I say that because I think Mark actually has a very good vision for where things are going and what's happening. We already know that 30% of the people that are coming to our website are coming on tablet or phone, and they're not coming on our tablet or our phone. And that's
right.
There's a problem there. It's a problem we need to solve. And Ubuntu's, I think, at the forefront of doing so. And with the work with Unity 8 and Mir, that means we're going to be able to develop more exciting products. Phones, tablets, maybe hybrids. It gives us that opportunity, and that opportunity is unique to Ubuntu in the open source world. It's also the only platform that I can say clearly goes from the desktop all the way up to the cloud and everything in between. And that's unique.
Right.
That's unique within open source, and frankly, it's unique within all of technology. There's not another platform that does the same thing.
One of the reasons that I'm an Ubuntu user and have been an Ubuntu user for years is that I care about design, right? I like things to look and feel nice. And it's nice that System 76 have kind of embraced that idea, that you actually go out and not just make appalling beige box computers, but actual pretty things. What's the process of that like? I mean, you've obviously got designers on staff and so on, but how does that actually work? Do you get to design things from scratch, or do you go shopping at ODMs, or what?
Oh, well, it's an interesting process. Years ago, when we just started out, it was you take what you get and you just make the best of it. We've grown substantially since then, so now we work in collaboration with our upstream manufacturers to both design products and to perfect them for Ubuntu. So now we're very tightly integrated with our partners for our mutual interest, and we've made some good bets that they've said, okay, that works, so let's keep moving along there. And we take their input and expertise in materials and other areas, and together we produce a product.
And, one thing I wanted to focus on here a little bit is you have had this new rebrand, right? The logo's different, the website's different, it all looks very different, and it looks, without wishing to sound derogatory towards the previous System 76, which I thought looked excellent, we're all big fans, it looks more professional, it looks better. is this an explicit goal to get out there and to kind of raise System 76 into a higher market segment? Is the goal here to kind of really compete more effectively with the Dells and with the Toshibas and with the, probably Toshiba's a bad example, but you get my drift.
Yeah, I get it. You're right. Yes. Well, we're, one person put it that we are now out of the garage.
Nice.
We were actually out of my basement many years ago, but I guess we finally moved up here to something much more professional. What's interesting about design is that it's without being able to help itself, it always becomes dated. It just simply happens.
Right.
This is our fourth website in 9 years. And every time we did it, we felt like, okay, now we're on the edge again. Now, I think this time we leapfrog. I don't want to necessarily toot our own horn, but I think we leapfrogged everybody. There's no other computer manufacturer in the world where you can go on to, where we can choose a product that makes sense for you, and you can configure a complex product with multiple options on a cell phone screen.
Right.
I think that's something entirely unique, and the UX team over here did a fantastic job of cracking that nut, because it was good. It's complex. Now that when I see it, I think, boy, this is simple, but really getting to that was quite challenging. So I think staying ahead and our presentation, it's like one way to put it, it's like going to an Apple store versus going to car audio store to buy a phone. It feels entirely different when you walk in. There's purpose and there's direction, right, and there's focus. And that's part of our change is making you feel warm and fuzzy when you come in, because we're going to take care of you.
That sense of prestige, I suppose you'd call it, the sense of potential there, that's a deliberate, conscious decision by you to target people who feel like that, yes? Like me, as an example.
Your presentation is a matter of how much you care about what you're doing. And we care very deeply about the work we do. A rebrand is, in many ways, a rather cathartic experience. If it's done right, you think about, right, why does it matter what we do? Why should you care what we do? Why are we different than our competition? We go through and without cutting ourselves any slack, we answer these questions and we define more purely who we are and what we do and why it matters.
You said, I know that you sent out an email that went out to a bunch of your customers about the reasoning behind the change. One of the things you said in there was potential is why we send our children to school and why we send people to space. Potential is what might be if given the opportunity. Potential is why System 76 builds Ubuntu computers. I mean, That I found that interesting, because a lot of people in your position would send out a message to customers and say, hey, check out our snazzy new website and all of these incredible products that you can go and spend your money on. Whereas you talk about potential. Is that why you guys are doing it? I mean, from the uneducated eye, it would be, we just want to build a bunch of computers and sell them. But is there a bigger kind of meaning to the focus of System 76 and the reason why you use Ubuntu, or if you were to use another open source platform?
Oh, certainly. That letter hits at the core of it. Computers are very meaningful to me. They're very meaningful for everyone that works here because of the potential that they present. It's not, and I guess that's why maybe I'm a little annoyed with phones sometimes and tablets, because you can't cure cancer with them. You can't get to space with them. You can't push society forward in the way you can with a computer, and that's why computers are still exciting to us,
right?
Because of that potential. And I know what happens when you put unfettered opportunity in front of a kid versus tight constraints in a box, and that's the difference. That's our purpose, and why we feel our jobs are even more important today than they were 5 years ago.
And I got to ask the question that I know some people are going to want to know, right? So we've seen this Ubuntu convergence strategy spring up, and I'm sure you know where I'm going with this. But there is Ubuntu on the desktop, and the convergent platform is in development. I know I've asked you this question, I think, informally, and I'm sure a bunch of people have, but when are we going to see a System 76 Ubuntu tablet or an Ubuntu phone? Have you guys explored this?
We'll see a phone or a tablet when we have an operating system that's rock solid and ready for it,
right.
Or shortly thereafter. So that's the only thing we're waiting on, and we'll do so patiently because I know that there's a strong effort towards the quality and the presentation that matches our own effort on the hardware side. Those two things are going to come together at some point.
Gotcha.
That's excellent. Talking about the hardware, a brief question. I occasionally get the impression that I'm the only person alive who still uses a desktop computer rather than a laptop. And I know you've put a lot of effort into the design, the overall industrial design and feel of the laptops that you've worked on. And your desktop machines, I mean, you've just put out a new one, I believe. I wonder, have you thought about making one of those a kind of a flagship of design beauty?
Flagship, and so far as it's unique amongst the other desktops?
I was thinking more, it's quite often hard to get a beautiful desktop machine because people who sell high-end desktop machines tend to assume they're being bought by gamers, so it's just full of neon lights. Not what we're looking for. Is that somewhere where you think System 76 could really excel? I appreciate this stuff is in the eye of the beholder, so you might say the Leopard Extreme already is that. Shut up, language. But
I see exactly where you're going because I've had the same pains myself, and that's the product that you alluded to earlier. Our new Leopard Extreme is the exact example of that. It's entirely aluminum. It is a absolutely beautiful machine when you walk past it. It doesn't feel like a gamer machine, yet it has all of the internals and performance capabilities of a gamer machine that might have hard edges and red lights.
That's right. Gotcha. No red lights.
So when we decide on products and when we put them together, we first think about, is this classy? And then we move on from that point and develop the rest of the product. That's a general rule before we do things. We stop and say, okay, is this classy?
That's a brilliant. Yeah. That's a brilliant.
Putting something out that's classy, and whether it's a newsletter or a social post or whatever it is, let's make sure we keep this the level of class pretty high.
Absolutely. So bringing this into the conclusion, what's next for System 76? I mean, there's the rebrand, there's these new products that you're bringing out. We're assured that we're going to get a tablet or a phone in the future when Ubuntu's finished it. Maybe a System 76 smartwatch or a wearable or a rideable or some other crap. But what's the plans for the next year?
Well, right now it's produce more products. So we've had we've been within the same range of products for just over a year. So the next year or so is new packaging, new products. It's to push this brand out in its entirety. So today you see a new site, we have new branding on all products and those things, but there's a lot more work to be done to bring that full circle. I want people to receive their computer and open it up and feel excited just by the way it looks when they open the package. And so we have a lot of work in those areas, perfecting our craft, and then producing more products that are interesting.
Awesome. Well, you know, your passion for all of this clearly shows through, and I've known Carl for a while now, actually, and I couldn't think of a better person at the helm of all the work that you're doing. And also, just on behalf of the Bad Voltage team and the Bad Voltage community, we want to say a huge thank you as well, because System 76 are actually sponsoring Live Voltage in Los Angeles on the 20th of February 2015. And it's System 76 who are going to be able to get the Bad Voltage team together for the first time ever in the same room. So big thank you to Carl for that as well. So
you're welcome, guys.
Absolutely.
Glad to do it.
All right. Well, thanks again, Carl. All the best for the future. And folks, go and check out more about System 76. I believe the website is system76.com. Thanks, Carl.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you.
Take care. The other day I read about Alex from Target, a good-looking kid that some teenage girl fawned over and tweeted about. Within a day, boom, 500,000 followers on Twitter and a guest appearance on Ellen. What the actual fuck? You want to know why TV is dominated with Honey Boo Boo, the Kardashians and the Amish Mafia? You want to know why Facebook is filled with selfies and pictures of people's salads? Why Bieber is more popular than the US president? And why more people have duck lips than ducks? Narcissistic, materialistic, frippery. That's what. The bottom feeders have taken over because someone performed an upper decker in the gene pool. People, get a grip. Sure, relax, be silly and have fun. But we have to put a stop to this tsunami of tepid diarrhea squirted out by the Taco Bells of our species. We live in a society that increasingly celebrates shallow, disconnected experiences. Content that is designed to serve the majority, designed around focus groups and polls, and resulting in an industry so dominant that the indies can't compete. I believe in people. I believe in art, creativity, new ideas and new approaches. But all artists need an audience, and our current audience is a drooling mess. Come on, people, let's fix this. A few shows back, we talked about this thing called the Rubik's Portal, which is basically a phone that's bendable that you can put on your arm. So it kind of looks a little bit like a screen that wraps around your arm a bit. And it's designed for people who are jumping out of aeroplanes and diving and office people and it stuff is. Like that. And they basically, a Rubik's kicked off this crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo to build this thing. And then some guy came forward and said, hang on, I own a bunch of intellectual property on this. The crowdfunding campaign was taken down. And I think that's where, is that where we last...
The other thing which came up is the technology they're saying is going to be in it seems massively implausible, and everyone went, what, no way can they build this, surely it's a hoax.
Well, just for it's basically a 6-inch bendable screen with a 3200 milliamp flexible battery, 4 cameras, a GPS and a whole bunch of other stuff that's waterproof and less than a 5mm body that bends around your arm like a slap bracelet, all for $349. Yeah. Just for reference of what the product is.
Yeah, no
biggie. So if we're being honest, we...
Pretty ho-hum, really.
We looked at this with a certain amount of incredulousness.
It was incredulous.
Incredulity would work.
Check out my book, The Art of Community. we were a little cynical about it. Anyway, what's happened? We wanted to touch back on this because we think it's interesting. The Indiegogo campaign went back online again, and I can't remember exactly how much the original amount they were trying to raise, but it went back online with that amount, which I think was about 300K. And then bizarrely, the following day, they dropped it down to 50 grand. And as we record this right now, they've raised 44,000 of that 50 grand. So,
and since it's flexible, they'll get, regardless of what the total is, because I think it ends in like 50 something hours.
Yeah,
they get whatever.
A couple of days.
Yeah.
So they've had about 150 funders. And this campaign has been panned pretty significantly in the press, it has to be said. We thought, we should probably get the CEO of Rubik's on here, right?
Yeah.
We should get this from the horse's mouth. So
let's get a horse.
Let's get him on. Let's get a horse. I'm sure he's going to love being referred to as a horse, by the way. All right. So we've got Brandon Mayers. Thank you for joining us, Brandon, to fill us in a little bit on the portal. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Very, very good. So I guess the first question I'd like to kick off with, since you launched this Indiegogo campaign, since people learned about the portal, the predominance of feedback that I've seen from people has been, really? I mean, can you guys actually build and deliver this thing? This seems to be a technology, particularly the bendable screen, the bendable battery, seems to be something that other companies like Samsung and LG have tried to build something similar, and they haven't been able to do that yet. So is this something that you guys can really deliver in the time frame that you're talking about?
Yeah, that's a good question. there's definitely a lot of variables involved. Building a smartphone is really not a challenge. The barriers to market are mostly all the licensing costs. They're millions. To start a smartphone company, it's tens of millions of dollars. And most of that all goes to licensing. It's just a piece of paper and a certificate you get and a password to a website or something like that. You don't get very much in return. So it's definitely challenging. It's a VC scale project. So it's just something that should be considered, that the electronic side of it, nothing that we're doing defies physics. Everything that we have, they're the same components that everybody else uses. We just use the configuration of components completely differently. So,
I think a thing to clarify there, then, I mean, yes, as you say, building a cell phone is in itself not difficult. But normally when someone brings out a new device, it'll be better than the competition in some way. But you've got a device which is thinner than everyone else's, and it's got more battery than everybody else's, and it's bendable, which no one can do. How are you able, as a company who frankly no one had heard of up until now, how are you able to make this leap forward in so many different ways? Because that's what's made a lot of people essentially treat you as maybe a hoax. What can you do to reassure us?
We bumped into a guy the other day on UC Berkeley, and he saw the portal, and he was like, whoa! He was like, I thought that was fake! People have seen it on CNET, you know, they know about it, but a lot of people, yeah, they think it's fake. And it doesn't bother me. You know, you're right. There's a lot of things out there on the market that just don't offer a lot. And to be quite honest with you, the display, for instance, that everyone's so caught up on, the flexible display, I won't mention the phone, but it's been in a phone that's been on the market for 2 years now. It's not a popular phone. Nobody knows about it, really. And, it was in development 2 years after that. So in technology standards, the flexible display we're using is, 4 years old.
Well, what's
not even being manufactured.
Well, what? Just out of curiosity, which phone is that?
I can't say. Unfortunately, yeah, I can't say. But there's only two companies in the world right now, and they're major. If I said them, you'd know what they are. They're major companies. They're Korean. I'll give you that. They're major companies that are making flexible displays. It's been out for a long time now. It's really not that cutting edge. For instance, like the phone itself. A lot of people ask, how are you getting flexible components? None of our components are flexible. They're just the regular chipsets that are on every other phone. They're just on a flex PCB. And that's totally not advanced technology. Flex PCB has been around for the longest time. The same thing with our battery. Our battery is not technically flexible. It's a flexible battery system. So the things that a lot of people are saying that some of your tech is way over the top. It's really not. It's just we decided to just throw away the existing platform of the way that they're doing mobile phones with the metal chassis and with screws and using old school traditional hard PCBs and the way that they lay out the battery opposed to the PCB. We're doing it just completely different. And to answer one of your other questions, why are we doing something that other manufacturers aren't? Every other manufacturer can do exactly what we're doing. We have access to the same sources, the same suppliers, the same engineer talent. It's all the same. The reason why that the phones are the way that they are is because the system that they have a gentleman's agreement between each other. The platform and the way that they offer their phones now, they make a lot of money. If you think about it, glass touchscreen phones have been around for the last 10 years, the last decade, and a case for a phone costs fractions of a cent. Why in the last 10 years have manufacturers not included a case already just attached to the phone so you won't break it? For the longest time, I didn't believe, no, they wouldn't do that.
I gotta say, I don't know that I fully buy into that. I know a lot of people like at HTC or Samsung, man. I mean, if they can do something that just makes Apple look completely retarded, oh, hell yes, they're going to do it. I mean, if they can take a massive leap and jump forward to make Apple just look like just a piece of dog poo, they're going to do that in a heartbeat, and they're going to make so many commercials about it. So I don't know. I'm just not buying it. I think what you guys are doing, I like pushing the technology forward. I like doing things in a little different way. I really dig that. I guess I'm kind of with a lot of the public perception. That's where it's like that guy that you ran to at UC Berkeley, where I'm just like, I don't fully believe it until I see it, because it is so distinctly different from everything else. Are you guys going to be getting, you know, like, you know, kind of pre-alpha units to, you know, some of the big tech journalists so that they can kind of do like little hands-on, even if it's ahead of time, just to instill a level of confidence in people?
Us, as an example.
That's a good question. It's a possibility, but to be quite honest, I don't think it's necessary. The reason why I say it's not necessary is because no matter what anybody in the public thinks, whether it's fake or it's real, there's three major U.S. carriers that are not prepaid carriers that we're speaking with, and they could care less what people think because they actually see the prototype. You know, they get to feel it, touch it, they see it, so they know. To be honest with you, those are the people that are going to be the ones ultimately kind of backing and partnering with our project, where they're going to do a lot of the marketing on their end.
I get that perspective from one angle, but from my experience of working at Canonical and working on the Ubuntu phone and some of the relations with carriers there, from our experience, carriers really do care about public perception, because, you know, it's about brand and it's about what people think about a particular product and whether they're interested in going out of it. So, you know, an Ubuntu phone or a Firefox phone or an Arubix portal is going to be a new thing. It's going to be an unknown. And one thing that I was going to, on the point that you made about, you know, you don't think it's very important. Surely it's important in terms of the perspective that people have of Arubix, because the impression that I think we've got and that we've seen from some of the reporting is that this is too good to be true, essentially, is that, you know, until people see, you know, to Brian's point, until people see like a working model, not a glossy promotional video, then people aren't going to really buy into it. And it seems like the Indiegogo campaign that you guys have been running has suffered because of that, right? Is because the people, it's too good to be true. I mean, if you guys have really built this thing, it's world changing, but until people can see it, when do you think we will really be able to see this thing in action? So people can, so all of that FUD goes away that, you know, maybe this thing doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, to answer your question, just one last time about trying to clear up the mysticism in the media. You know, it's definitely a possibility. It's just, we have a rollout right now. We have a strategy. We have all these things that we're going to do that are incredibly disruptive. And we kind of embrace Apple and Apple's kind of the way that they introduce products to the market. It's quite different from everyone else, kind of, you know, on the more Android side devices. We kind of want to shadow that model because we think it works really well. But there's a possibility. I can't say anything for sure that we will have, you know, somebody do a review maybe a few months before we ship out. It's always a possibility.
But just to reiterate Jono's question, do you have any kind of time frame for when you might start shipping the very first units?
Yeah, so it's just slightly a little bit less than 12 months. We're going to try to get the units out, obviously, before Black Friday.
And do you think that, I mean, you know, I remember when I first heard about the portal, I went and watched the video that's in your crowdfunding campaign, which is really quite nicely put together. And it really, I think it does a great job of showing the potential of the device. When those units ship, are people going to be able to buy exactly that thing that they saw in that video? Or is it going to be not quite as nice as that?
No, it'll be a lot better. That's the reason why we didn't show. See, we actually had to dumb it down, if that makes any sense. There was way more features, there was way more to it. And we had to sort of speak dumb it down, because we thought what everyone is thinking now, that, oh, they'll just think it's not real. So what it is now is And that's another reason too why we didn't show a ton of footage, because we want to underpromise and overdeliver. And there's a lot of things about the phone that it does that are incredibly amazing. To me, more amazing than a flexible display. And when those people open the box and they have that experience of opening the box and smelling the box and seeing what's inside and how it's all laid out and their first power on, what it does when it powers on is, to me, is I think it's the most amazing thing. And that experience, that's what's going to make them say, holy, you know.
Now, wait. I know my compatriot Stuart here has a burning question for you, but before I let him do that, I have to ask, what the hell does the box smell like?
Fine Italian leather. No, I don't know, but you know, it's that smell that you smell when you open up your first iPad or something like that. It's just that overwhelming experience when you open up, you know, a great product. That moment sticks with you forever, and you're a loyalist. And I think that's what's missing from everything except for Apple. Everyone to Apple is a loyalist, but everyone else to everything else doesn't seem to be very much of a loyalist, because the way they do things is just not sentimental anymore. The experience just isn't as good, in my opinion.
So I'll go for the Indiegogo reward of the lemon scented Rubik's bottle. a final question. If you look at your campaign, it was originally running for $300,000 or something, and you dropped it to about $50,000, which at point of recording, you've nearly reached. Jono mentioned earlier the Ubuntu Edge, and you've talked about it being a cutting-edge device. Now, Canonical wanted $30 million. Even if we assume that the truth is halfway in between the two, you're asking for $50,000 instead of $16 million. Where's the rest of the money coming from to build the phone?
Yeah, external funding. Yeah, VC funding. Gotcha. There's a lot of partnerships and alliances, like I said, with carriers that we're going to be doing very, very soon. You realistically, if you go to Ubuntu Edge's campaign and you look at what they were trying to raise, which I think was $32 million, that's how much it costs to start a smartphone company, legitimately. And to be able to realistically crowdfund that, it's not realistic. You just can't. But what you can do with a crowdfunding campaign is you can raise a little bit of money that'll help. It shows VCs and it shows carriers proof of concept that, hey, look, there's people interested in this. They're willing to pay for this. This is what they'll pay. This is what they're comfortable paying. This is their feedback. You can get a lot of data, viable data from doing a crowdfunding campaign a little bit early to find out what your landscape is going to look like. And that was kind of our ultimate goal. Also, too, really quick, a lot of the carriers or a lot of the people in tech and hardware were saying, oh, this would be a great enterprise product, you know, for like UPS drivers, delivery people, where they could wear the portal, right? And they could get deliveries and maybe even law enforcement or something like that. And to be quite honest with you, as the original founder, I didn't want to see our device on UPS drivers' arms. So it was another way for us to kind of prove that there is a consumer need for it. So that was another reason for it.
And just before we let you go, Brendan, one final question. The device that we saw in that video, was that real or was that just a mock-up?
Which video?
As in the video on your Indiegogo campaign, and you see people jumping out of planes and using it in the normal world, like, does this thing exist today? Like, the thing that we saw in the video, does this thing exist today, or is this all plans?
Yeah. So most of the components of the phone do exist today. The displays, the PCB is kind of a rigged donor PCB, and the battery system that we're using in the powering on videos, which you may just see another one today, is not what is going to be in production. The displays will be the same, the polycarbonate and the case that the phone is in will all be the same, but the batteries and the PCB are still under development.
Gotcha. Well, Brendan, I know that you pulled over to a Starbucks so you could hop on the phone with us.
Say bye, Starbucks.
I know that
appreciate it.
And it's been a hectic month or so for you guys. So thank you so much for joining us and coming on and asking us the questions. And I have one final quest. Can you make sure that you get the Bad Voltage team one of these things to play with as soon as possible?
What was that? Say that again.
Can you make sure that you get the Bad Voltage team one of these portals for us to play with as soon as we can?
Absolutely. I as I told you, I thought we were gonna talk later, so I was gonna try to get some footage literally before we spoke to send to you guys. So I will send you something tonight.
Awesome.
Guys, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's been fun.
Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks.
Take care.
While not necessarily a voracious reader, I am someone who enjoys reading regularly. For a long time, I strongly preferred print books to reading on a screen. The Kindle changed that, though. While some people may not mind reading entire books on a tablet or a computer screen, for me, the e-ink display makes all the difference. For reference, the Kindle Voyage is my third Kindle, replacing the Kindle Keyboard 3G, which I purchased in 2011, which in turn replaced the original OG Kindle, which I think I got in 2008. So, how does the new Voyage compare? First, let me get a couple boring specs out of the way. This is the thinnest Kindle ever made. At just 7.6 millimeters, it's actually thinner than a Samsung Galaxy S5. Its 16-level grayscale 300 ppi display sits flush with the bezel and delivers twice as many pixels as the previous generation Kindle Paperwhite, which my esteemed colleague Jono reviewed in episode 18. It has an adaptive front light which automatically adjusts to your environment, comes with 4 gigs of storage, and a single charge lasts for over a month of regular usage. With that out of the way, let's get to actually using the device. First, let me say that the Amazon frustration-free packaging is absolutely top shelf. Every time I get an electronic device in Gordian knot packaging, I wonder why some companies treat their customers with such disdain. I'm going to guess you aren't going to purchase a device based solely on its packaging, however. The first thing you'll notice when you pick up the Kindle Voyage is that it's very well constructed. The magnesium alloy unibody is light, durable, and has an attractive design. It also feels significantly better in your hands than the more recent Kindle iterations that I've used. You can tell Amazon has put real engineering work into making this feel not only like a solid product, but having it be reminiscent of holding an actual book. The Touch UI is a vast improvement over the last model I was using, and is surprisingly intuitive, with specific regions on the device dedicated to specific functionality. For example, you can turn pages by simply tapping the right or left side of the capacitive touchscreen. For those who prefer a more tactile approach, you can use the page press system, which consists of 2 pressure-sensitive sensors positioned on either side of the screen bezel and result in some haptic feedback being added to your page turns. The footnote and dictionary functionality are both vastly improved, and Wikipedia integration has been added. A previous annoyance, there is finally no ghosting or lag when turning pages. And most importantly, the screen really is best in class. It's a joy to read on, and graphics are much improved. So, what's the Bad Voltage verdict? At $199, the Kindle Voyage may be a little pricey for those people who are either not regular readers or have the most recent Paperwhite. That said, in my opinion, it is the best e-reader on the planet. If you're a regular reader, it's a Voyage that's well worth the trip.
So I have a quick question really to kick this off, which is, how do you feel like this is different from the existing Kindles? I mean, I reviewed the Kindle Paper White a while back. How do you think this is better?
Yeah, because I mean, I've got a Kindle 4, which is now clearly some kind of appalling ancient technology, but I can't think what I'd have different about it.
Oh, why would I want to with your fancy Kindle 4. I've got the original one that has like those weird little flimsy curved angular triangle buttons that
you have
are
the OG
half
one.
Off.
That was previously my favorite Kindle.
Kindle
one
OG.
Thing is,
seriously,
the OG, it's the one that started it all.
It predates books.
So to be fair, as I said in the review, I've not used the Paper White, but in comparing this with the 3G that I had in the OG, it is substantially nicer in almost every regard, and it's better enough that I would not go back to using one of the other ones. I think it is that good of a device. So like I said, if you have a Paperwhite, would I pay $200 for it? Maybe not. But if you have anything older than that, or you don't have one, then I think it's definitely worth the money. The touchscreen, the UI really is much better than I was anticipating. I typically don't like touchscreen UIs for devices like this, so I was supremely surprised that I didn't hate it. And not only do I not hate it, I actually quite a bit. I think I could honestly read a book faster with this device than I could purchase the book with the original Kindle. It's that much better and faster.
Wow. And the thing is, the Kindle, like with my Kindle, the Paperwhite, the screen is a bit laggy.
Yes,
like you mentioned that it's pretty.
The Kindle keyboard was almost annoying at times, where you would hit to move a page, and it would take like a second or two, which is a really long time for a 1,000-page book. So I think, in thinking about it now, one of the interesting things is I don't know how Amazon improves this device from here. My guess is the next iteration Kindle is almost the same, but is $119 instead of $199.
Well, this is the thing. My 4 was like £80 when I bought it. Question, what's the battery life like on it?
They claim 6 weeks. I haven't had it that long, but I haven't charged it since I bought it. It's got 3/4 of a charge. Yeah,
I mean, the thing I love about mine is that if I'm going away somewhere, I can read on the plane all the way there, and then while I'm there, and then the plane all the way back, and don't have to charge it up. What I then normally do, traditionally, is leave it on the plane on the way home, which I've now done 3 times, but it's all, but I've always got it back.
I don't know if they can fix that one.
The battery life is stunning. Like, actually, about two weeks ago, I started reading a book, and I hadn't looked at my Kindle for about probably 6 weeks when it last had about half of it charged, and it was still half charged.
Well, that's the great thing about e-ink, right, is that if you're not actually changing the page, it's not using battery. So that's what people that read books on tablets, I just don't understand. A, it aggravates my eyes, and maybe that's just me, but B, just the battery life and other things, it's not a very good book reading experience, in my opinion.
Have they changed the internals of it? I mean, with mine, you can plug it into your computer. It just appears as a USB device. You can just drop books onto it, and that works. Can you still do that?
I haven't tried to do that, but I believe you can, yes. I don't think anything about the OS changed.
You've only put books on it from
my existing Kindle library, right?
Right, okay. I mean, I haven't connected mine to Wi-Fi, because why should I, right? It's for reading books.
So it sounds like they've basically, based upon your review, Jeremy, they've basically pretty much just mastered the ebook reader. I mean, it's about as good as you can get, right?
I am pleasantly surprised at how good of a device it really is. But at $200, don't get me wrong, for an e-reader, that's a lot of money. For something that only reads books, that is a fair amount of cash to lay down.
Yeah, considering you can go out and buy a pretty beefy tablet for $200. So yeah, I mean, it is kind of a big pill to swallow for some people.
You'd have a battery life of a quarter of an hour.
Right, yes.
One of the things I wanted to ask was, one of the things that pleasantly surprised me when I got my Kindle was it did more than I had a Kindle DX years ago, and the one that the Paperwhite had things in there for showing like which paragraphs people highlighted and which were the most popular. So you got some kind of data out of the books that people were reading. Yep. Do you know if it does anything more in that capacity? Because that's really useful and interesting.
So I don't know if it's in the Paperwhite, but the X-ray feature actually is pretty cool if the Paperwhite doesn't have it. And I meant to mention it in my review. And
it does have it, but I've never used it.
I failed to do that. So you can actually highlight a character in any book, and it will give you a little bit of a backstory on them and some, you know, just some basic data on that character.
Oh, it's
pretty interesting. Correct.
You said character, you meant like the letter F.
I don't know how much you can tell you about the letter F. It's not Sesame Street. It's for actual.
It is when I read it.
Right. But the built-in Wikipedia stuff's pretty cool too. And like I said, the footnotes are way better than, at least on the 3G, when you highlighted a footnote, it actually brought you in essence to the back of the book.
Yeah.
And then you had to swipe back, where this just overlays it over the page.
Oh, that's nice.
Footnotes,
that's
so
nice.
That, I know that was a nice UI improvement. And like I said, it's just a bunch of little things that are better with a way better display, which to me make it worth it.
Cool. So, all in all, sounds like a pretty damn good ebook reader. If those of you who've got Kindles want to ask Jeremy any questions, I'm sure you can go to community.badvoltage.org, get your questions in, and he'll go and make sure you get the answers.
that almost wraps up another fine, fine edition of Bad Voltage, but we do have a couple other things that I think that we should talk about in closing, starting with something that I am really looking forward to. And what is that?
Oh, it is Live Voltage. Yeah. Which, for those of you who don't know what it is, it's basically is hanging out at scale and doing a live show. On the 20th of February in the Lord's year of 2015, we will be flying to Los Angeles, California, to do a live show in front of the SoCal Linux Expo. And it's going to be freaking awesome. We're actually starting to put plans in place for what we're going to talk about and how it's going to work. You can go and find out more details about the event at badvoltage.org/live. And we're going to be putting out some promo videos. Akka's got a brilliant promo video idea, which we can't tell you about.
We can't. It's a secret.
In the spirit of not being able to share information, right?
People may now decide that my brilliant idea is a hoax, right? And I'm okay with that.
If we can pull this off and it turns to be not a hoax, it will be almost as epic as the portal.
Right? You know what? I was thinking about that while we were talking with the Aerobics guy. How awesome would it be if he's kind of setting it up like it is kind of a hoax and they do ship it and just blow everyone's minds? That would just be the best troll. A year-long epic troll. That would be fantastic.
And the thing you do there is you do all that. It's all, and then they actually release the device, but then it goes on the market for $4,000. And the 116 people who spent $395 just walk around whacking people on the forehead with it and going, "See, I told you."
Okay, before we continue, I have to say one thing. If you're going down to scale in Los Angeles this next February and you're like, "Man, I know we got Live Voltage and it's rad and all, but it's just not enough Lunduk. Like, I could just use some more Lunduk, right, man?"
No one's ever said that. No one's ever said that.
Dude,
ever.
Don't burst my freaking bubble, man.
Sorry, man. Carry on.
This is my bubble. But the day before scale, we're putting together, it looks like an OpenSUSE kind of mini summit. And I'll be there the full day before scale. It's going to be the same place as scale. And it's kind of going to be like a little mini scale that's just on the SUSE side of things. And I'm going to be all over that place, probably wearing all green. But if you want more Lunduk, go one day early. I just wanted to put that out
SUSE.
There.
Yeah, exactly. Also, it ought to be pointed out, if it's SUSE people, then it's going to be pretty damn mini, I suspect. Anyway.
Whoa. Oh, Bachika. Wow.
Anyway.
Wow. Yeah, so definitely come and join us at Live Voltage. It's going to be amazing. We're going to have some giveaways. We're going to put on a rocking live show, okay? So
awesome.
You got to be in that audience. It's going to be freaking sweet.
And the rest of scale is apparently quite cool as well, but basically, come and see us.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
No, we can't actually, really. Just go to the OpenSUSE mini partnership or whatever it's called, and then come and see Live Voltage. And it'd be great. I believe Brian might actually be giving away some of those, whatever they're called, sausages.
It's entirely possible that might happen.
if you see a green lizard chucking Jimmy Dean into the crowd, you know who's underneath that suit.
But those sausages are fully bendable, by the way.
They are.
They do bend. Yeah.
No 3,200 right. milliamp hour implausible battery in them, though. So, other stuff I want to talk about. Those of you who listen to the show will know about the forum, community.badvoltage.org, and there's been a couple of really interesting discussions going on recently. Dot Waffle, who's big into the demo scene, has been talking about how he got into it and stuff like that. I think the demo scene's really, really interesting. Those of you who have no idea what it is or have no idea that it's still going on because the last time you saw a demo was a Future Crew one in like 1994, go and check the forum out because there's links to a bunch of things, my favourite ones in there, and it's really interesting. Secondly, there's been the diversity discussion, which Jono has waded into with both feet. So... and it's been interesting, but nicely, it's been respectful, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. That's what I love about it is, you know, we've seen this time, I know we've said this a few times before, but whether it's, we're talking about diversity, we've had discussions about atheism, we've had discussions about guns, And
we have the best community, right?
We really do.
Really do have the best community. You guys are fucking brilliant, guys and girls.
No, wait a minute. That does bring up an important point. Our community is truly spectacular, and the diversity discussion is very interesting. But it's, for the most part, a lot of dudes talking about diversity, specifically as it relates to women, which is a little bit creepy until we get some more ladies in there. So if there's any ladies listening, if you could come weigh in and tell the dudes why they're just kind of talking out their butts, that would be really, really helpful and make us all seem less creepy. So that would be awesome.
Actually, if there's the male listeners out there, if you have a female who you think would be interested in Bad Voltage, this would be a great time to get them involved in the community, have them listen to the last show and join the forum and let us know what you think. So that's a good opportunity to bring some more people on board.
That's a good idea. And just before we move on as well, you know what I think we should do? I think we should get Dot Waffle on the show for an interview about the demo scene. I think that might be interesting.
That would actually be interesting, yeah.
Because I think a lot of people don't know about it. And I went and looked up some of these demos and they're freaking incredible. Cool. Yeah.
So. All right. We want to thank our sponsors. We want to thank System 76 for helping us make the scale event, this Live Voltage event, possible, and for bringing Stuart all the way across the ocean and helping us get him here so that we can do this show.
On the show and doing announcements.
Right. Thank announcing that thing that we're all really excited about, that we talked in depth about already. That thing was really cool.
You're breaking the magic, London. You're breaking the magic.
we want to thank A2 Hosting and Bite Mark Hosting for one very important reason. They keep us on the internet. Without them, we would simply not be on the internet. We would be relegated to simply being in balloons flying just wherever the wind takes us above the jet stream. And that, as we have talked about, is just not practical.
I hope we can get on one of those 200 meg chunks.
Honestly, four of us floating around in a balloon lobbing cassette tapes out the top. We're like, check out the new show.
That would be brilliant. 8 tracks out the top. If you're in the UK, honestly, right, next time someone says, oh, use DigitalOcean, don't use Bite Mark. They're loads better.
Yeah. Also, just before we wrap up, just want to say, on behalf of Bad Voltage, I hope it's on behalf of the Bad Voltage team. Maybe someone's going to disagree with me, but congratulations to our friends in the Linux Outlaws for a long and impressive set of shows. They recently announced that they're wrapping up, and they got to, I think, 365 shows, something like that. You could listen to one a day. So if you want to kill yourself, you can go and listen to one of their shows every single day. But you know, kudos to Fabulous Fab and Dan for all of their efforts with La over the years.
Yeah, so, way to go, Fabulous Fab.
Yeah, they did a good job. Well played. I mean, I have disagreed with Fab on many an occasion. Dan, I never disagree with because he's great and supports Liverpool.
Well, to be fair, Fab is full of shit about almost everything. So, I mean, I like Fab, but he was remarkably wrong about so many things. Literally almost everything.
Almost every single thing we can possibly mention. Jeremy, pick a random topic right now. Any topic. Look around your room.
You throwing sausages in the lizard outfit.
Fab is wrong about that. That's how this works.
It's true. People are like, hey, check that thing out. It's a dog. Like, no, it's a lizard.
No.
On that fine note.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
So yes.
Finished. This petered out very nicely in a very satisfying sort of a thud. Perfect. That's how you end a show. Ladies and gentlemen, you just got schooled.